Welcome to the Science Update Podcast. I'm Bob Hirshon, and this is the podcast for June 12th, 2009. This week, we've got the latest news from NASA and beyond. We'll tell you how the Messenger spacecraft is shedding light on Mercury's mysteries, and what determines whether a dying star becomes a supernova or a black hole. But first, Science Update's New York correspondent Justin Warner reports on the unintended consequences of expanding our presence in space.
There's a buzz in the aerospace industry about a future boom in rocket launches. Improved technology may soon make reusable launch vehicles more practical and cost-efficient, making it possible to launch rockets much more often than we do now. That could help support industries ranging from satellite-based solar power collection to space tourism. But there's a catch. Rocket exhaust contains chemicals that deplete the Earth's protective ozone layer, which is finally healing. In a new report, Martin Ross of the Aerospace Corporation in Los Angeles notes that this could become a significant issue if the space industry really takes off.
So let's look at that entire picture and sort of imagine what kind of world might evolve over the next 20 or 30 years.
Ross and his colleagues determined that there's a physical limit to how much material you can actually launch into orbit using today's propellants. However, that limit still leaves room for a 20 to 50-fold increase in launched materials. What's more, they note that we know very little about how liquid propellants, which would fuel reusable vehicles, affect the ozone layer. University of Colorado atmospheric scientist Darren Tuohy says that fortunately, it's now possible to track rocket fuel particles and other debris in the stratosphere.
There are actually ways to say this is an ablation piece of some kind of an engine, or this is a piece of something that came off of a vehicle that re-entered the atmosphere and pieces came off. There are ways to measure that now, and that's an incredibly powerful thing that we could do to attribute a current situation to a current launch rate and then allow people to scale that any way they so choose.
Linking those particles to ozone damage could give scientists and policymakers hard numbers that will help them regulate the rocket industry effectively and fairly in the future.
Thanks, Justin. Well, 40 years ago, American astronauts planted the first flag on the moon. Is it time to add a house? Robotics students at Mälardalen University in Sweden think so. They have an unusual class project, design a robot that could build a lunar home. Their professor, Lars Asplund, teamed up with Swedish artist Michael Genberg to design the house itself. Asplund says Genberg is no stranger to designing houses for out-of-the-way places. He's built cabins both underwater and in the trees.
And now he has the idea of putting a small house on the moon, a typical Swedish house, red house with white corners.
Asplund notes that it would be cheaper to ship the building materials to the moon in a small box and have the robot assemble them on site than to launch a finished house into space. While no one would actually live in the house, it would stand beside other countries' flags as a symbol of achievement. Next, Suzanne Bard investigates the fate of stars once they burn themselves out.
When massive stars burn through all of their fuel, they collapse and then explode into bright supernovas. But for really big stars, ones that are 40 to 60 times the mass of our sun, the picture is a little different. They still collapse, but they have the potential to form a black hole instead. Evan O'Connor is a graduate student in the theoretical astrophysics group at Caltech. He says many different parameters, not just mass, determine what happens to a collapsed star.
What we're trying to do is run simulations that look at all these parameters to see which stars form black holes and which stars explode in supernovas.
O'Connor says the work may help explain stars that seem to disappear, and they hope to better understand the mechanism behind stellar explosions, events so frequent that astronomers see them every day.
Thanks, Suzanne. Next, Justin reveals a new side to the planet Mercury.
Until last year, globes of the planet Mercury were blank on one side. It wasn't a factory error. Scientists just didn't know what was there. Now, the new Messenger spacecraft is coloring in that missing half. Arizona State University planetary scientist Brett Denevi explains that the only previous mission to Mercury, Mariner 10, happened over 30 years ago. It flew by Mercury three times, but each flyby occurred around the same point in Mercury's extremely long, slow day.
When Mariner 10 flew by the planet, the same side was always in shadow in the nighttime.
Not only that, the pictures it did take were technologically primitive.
It was a long time ago, so the images were taken with basically a TV camera. The data was, not great. It left a lot of ambiguities. Most of the surface we didn't have any color data for. And the color is really key in helping us understand, you know, the composition and other important things.
In contrast, MESSENGER can take pictures in 11 wavelengths of visible, ultraviolet, and near-infrared light. And it's been able to photograph the previously unseen territory. With the resulting high-resolution images, Denevi and her colleagues are finally filling in the Mercury map and finding some surprises. For example,
we saw that about 40% of the surface was covered in smooth plains, and a lot of those are interpreted to be volcanic in origin.
That's significant because before MESSENGER, some scientists believed that Mercury was a long-dead hunk of rock like the Moon. The new evidence suggests its surface has a geologically active history, more like the planet Mars. Still, Denevi notes that despite these volcanic pasts, these planets haven't constantly resurfaced themselves up to the present day like Earth. So studying their ancient features may give scientists new clues about the early history of the solar system.
Thanks, Justin. NASA scientists recently tested some of their tiniest and largest spacecraft. They put several small nanosatellites into orbit, including three 4-inch 2-pound cubes, not much larger than Rubik's cubes. They're testing new navigational and control instruments, along with a new method to generate power in space. A fourth small satellite is looking at how antifungal agents affect yeasts in microgravity.
And at the other end of the scale, NASA has successfully deployed the largest parachute ever made. The chute is 150 feet across and weighs 1 ton. The Ares is the first of a series of new rockets designed to return humans to the moon and eventually carry them to Mars.
Thanks, Suzanne. Well, that's our show for this week. Next week, we'll have a whole new constellation of science stories for you to enjoy from the comfort of Earth. Until then, stimulate the billions and billions of neurons in your brain by exploring the scientific cosmos of the Science Update Podcast Daily Edition. We've got a new story every day, Monday through Friday. You can find it on our website, scienceupdate.com, or at iTunes. And if you're contemplating a cosmic conundrum, give us a call at 1-800-WHY-IS-IT, and we'll scour the outer reaches of the universe for an answer. Thanks for listening. I'm Bob Hirshon for AAAS, the Science Society.